Good morning, everyone. If you are joining us remotely or if you're in the chamber, you have joined the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting of April 29th. And I'm going to turn it over to Rafael Paz, who's going to tell everybody at home how they can join remotely. Rafael, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. So the committee has been scheduled today in a hybrid format with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 toll-free and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#. Alternatively, you can log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they are using the Zoom app or dial *9 if you're participating by phone. Thank you.
Thank you, Rafael. John, it's my understanding, if you'll confirm, that items 1 and item 7 have been deferred. Is that your understanding?
Correct.
Okay, great. And we have a couple of time certains, just if you're here waiting and you want to go get a coffee. So first up, we're going to take item 11. We'll get started on that in a minute. At 10 a.m., we'll be doing the item 12 and item 3 after that. And at 11 a.m., we'll be doing item 8. And while we don't have a time certain, if you're here for the waste hauler item 13, it will not be called until after 10:30 or 11 because we have a couple of people that are not here that ask that we hold that one. So if you're here for that one, you want to go get a coffee, a bagel, or whatever. So with that, we'll call item number 11, Discuss Ocean Drive Promenade Music Series Funding. And Lisette, why don't you tee it up for us?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. We have the Ocean Drive Promenade Music Series. That is on December 8th, the Mayor and Commission approved the closing of Ocean Drive between 13th Street and 14th Place. It officially opened on January 17th. And as soon as February 6th, the Ocean Drive Association started programming the plaza area at 5 p.m. with beautiful symphonic performances, and it's been really well received by the neighborhood. Today, they are asking for additional funding for about 26 events and 3 pop-up performances in the amount of $100,000 and $100,450. This morning, we have Jonathan Plutznik, Chairman of the Ocean Drive Association, who has a presentation for us this morning.
Okay. Jonathan, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Commissioners, thank you very much. Very quickly, again, I chair the Ocean Drive Association. I own the Betsy Hotel. I live at 1455 Ocean Drive. I sit at the SoBeSafe board table with my friend and chair behind me, Ken Coppell. And I just completed 15 months chairing the Mayor's Committee on the Future of the Art Deco Cultural District. Like you, I've immersed myself in things Ocean Drive and things South Beach related. Very quickly, and I think we have a slideshow, but I'm going to keep speaking. We're asking for $100,000 in change. By the way, what we're asking for is two-thirds of our requirements. One-third we are matching. What you'll see on the screen, frankly, are pictures from recent events, much commentary from our residents. So again, one-third, two-thirds, two-thirds for the city, one-third for us. I should note, by the way, when you all graciously gifted us the promenade, we were asked, can we program this space? And not knowing exactly what we were going to do, we simply said, yes, we'll figure it out. And as Lisette just mentioned a moment ago, it took us a couple of weeks, and we teed up 26 concerts and communicated to the community that something new was happening here that was very powerful and positive. I want to stress that the people who come to this, first, those that are sitting in chairs, residents from all over town. This is not an Ocean Drive event. It's not a South Beach event. People are coming from south of 5th and Flamingo and Collins Park. And as each week passes and people know more and more about it, more are coming. The second thing I would highlight is the diversity of the crowd. What's very striking and powerful to watch is who stops and listens to the music. Young people, old people, all shades, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and it's impossible to predict whether it's opera is going to move them or this past month jazz. It's very powerful to see. Now, I talk about the 200 to 300 people who we've seen come every week. What's more striking to me are perhaps the couple of thousand who are walking by on Ocean Drive as this thing is going on and stop. And you can see by their faces, they're saying, oh my gosh, this is Ocean Drive. We're transforming the brand. So again, I want to repeat, we were asked, could we program? We just dove in. We didn't have money from the city at all. This is not additional funding from the city. This is the first dollar from the city that we're asking for to help us complete the season. We hope next year, frankly, this is a very powerful event, that we can find some elevated corporate citizen to join with us to sponsor some or all of this. This is the kind of thing that should have a corporate name attached to it. Frankly, I say respectfully, not a liquor sponsor, but some elevated corporate entity that wants to associate themselves with great jazz, great opera, great classical music. I want to conclude by simply thanking my sister Deborah, who's programmed all of this, Ceci, who's actually made it all happen operationally. They've been a great team, and we just went and did it. Thank you for listening.
Mr. Chair, if I may. First off, let me congratulate Mr. Pletzik and the Ocean Drive Association for quickly making things happen here. We all know how critical it is that we transform the Art Deco Cultural District. And, you know, it's one thing to have a lot of good conversation. It's another thing to get it done. Generally, you know, we don't like to do things mid-year. Generally, when I think of match, I think of 50-50. That said, I do believe this is a little different. This is strategic. It's unique. I listened very carefully that next year there'll be a marquee sponsor, so we'll be in a different spot. So as a one-time, I will support this today.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm fully supportive. It's, you know, thank you for your tireless efforts to try to improve Ocean Drive. This is definitely, I think, one of the ways we're going to go about doing it, by activating it, particularly with live performances. I'm fully supportive.
Thank you. Very good idea.
I,
too, am supportive. I do believe in the matchy-matchy one-to-one, and I would hope that as a goal for next year, the next fiscal year, as you continue the series, you'll have a sponsor, and then we can be talking one-to-one, which is something I tell other neighborhoods. I do have a question, John. I believe this is an unfunded item, so we're going to move it out of this committee with a favorable to the commission. Do you have a recommendation on how it might be funded?
It would probably come from the resort tax contingency.
Yeah, I would support that. I think we've been, our numbers are running ahead of that. I would encourage you all, as you can look at the series and you move into the next fiscal year, to maybe do some informal surveys, maybe get some volunteers to go out and talk to the people that are on the lawn, ask them what neighborhoods they're from, because I truly believe this is coming from four or five different communities, so it's not just one neighborhood. So with that, I think we've got unanimous support that we will move this back to the commission. John, can we move this on May 4th? Can we get this on the agenda for May 4th?
Yes.
Okay, let's show it moved unanimously back to the full commission on May 4th with a recommendation that we fund this with resort taxes and encourage the team for the next fiscal year to do a one-to-one and also to gather some data so we can confirm numbers and where people are coming from. With that, we'll show this item closed. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Question. Yeah, so lots of communities throughout the country do this kind of thing. You know, New York comes to mind, you know, theater and shows in Central Park and there are other parks and stuff. And, you know, I think there's a great opportunity to get a headline sponsor for sure. And the question I have, you know, for our marketing team, you know, what can we do with our existing corporate sponsors to maybe sponsor some of this? But then also our marketing and PR department, what are we going to do to market this when the performances happen? How do we put it out on social media, help it go viral? And then we also have got, you know, Live Nation as a partner. You know, maybe ask them for, you know, maybe not their marquee acts, but maybe when their marquee acts are here, maybe they want to do a
a solo performance or, you know, a one-off, or the opening act can go down there. But I'm sure Live Nation would like to participate.
Could I make a quick comment? I was remiss in not recognizing the GMCVB that's leaned in a little bit with some technological and social media-related support. We've created an Ocean Drive Arts platform, a website, to begin to collect some of this stuff. But there's much work to do, Commissioner, to move that forward. We've gotten actually a lot of good press this past week. We're in the midst of what we call the Overture to Overtown Festival at the Betsy for the 10th year in a row. That's gotten a lot of press, Miami Herald, Miami New Times, et cetera, which I'll share with you away from this meeting. But we need to do more, for sure.
I mean, if we can make this, and I have a lot of faith that it will catch on, and if we can make this sort of a prestige place for artists to perform, then I think we also get people to come and perform for free just to be able to say we performed, you know, on Ocean Drive and in Loomis Park. And the other thing to think about is, you know, we're all sort of the same age. The folks that appeal to us don't appeal to the younger audiences, particularly the really little, like my little five-year-old. You just go on YouTube and see the kinds of artists that appeal to the toddlers, because if we want to bring families here, we're going to have to put performances on that appeal to kids.
I agree with you completely, and we've tried and I think succeeded in having really elevated performers this past week. We had Nicole Henry and Melton Mustafa, who was fantastic, but
you and I like her, but
the crowd, yeah. Babies, adults, yeah. Black and white. I mean, it was really quite striking to watch. But what's interesting, because we've had New World Symphony, we've had New Deco Ensemble, we've actually tried to engage organizations in the community that are elevated from a performance point of view to be part of this thing, to make it a community thing. But it's striking to watch the crowd react in ways that it surprise you very positively to music you think they might not react to, but they're energized by the performance in the place.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We are going to call up item 10. I think that may be yours as well. Discussion of retroactive fee waivers and sponsorship of the Florida International University. Go ahead, Lisette. Tee that up for us.
Thank you. So this is another great event. This one focuses more on health and wellness. It's in its ninth year on March 15th and 16th. Of this year, they had a volleyball tournament, which is national collegiate level. They bring competing teams to 6th Street and Ocean Drive. The city has, for the last 8 years, sponsored this item. FIU is a partner of the city of Miami Beach, and so what they are asking for is a sponsorship of special event fees and city services in the amount of $16,000. I would like to also add that they weren't able to do it last year due to COVID, and they did not know of our new special events application process, so they missed a deadline. But they'd have applied this year. We are actually reviewing their application now. And are there any questions?
So it's a retroactive fee waiver request, right?
That's correct.
It's my understanding that they also put up some of their own funding to produce the event?
Yes, so their operating budget is about $22,000. And they also had a hotel room block at the Majestic for about $9,400. The other hotels were across in the Miami area because of the high hotel room rates. They weren't able to get more.
And does the administration have a recommendation?
Yes, we recommend to fund their request.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally, we like to do things in a forward-looking basis, but FIU is a special partner. I think the circumstances around COVID, they wouldn't be the only folks that missed the paperwork and certain requirements, so I'll support and move it today.
Are you okay with this? Okay. So, John, we'll show that done unanimously with support. Let's move it back to the commission for ratification, and with that, we'll close this item. I'm calling item number 9, Commissioner Samuelin. That is your item, discussion regarding UNIDAD's acoustic system. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, let me introduce it, and then Adrian, I think, is going to speak, and we may even have some other folks that want to comment. The short story is UNIDAD is an amazing facility, and the city and the community should be so proud of what we've put. We have a little bit of the winner's curse. When you have such a great place, a lot of people want to use it. And I have been there on multiple occasions, heard the noise concerns that residents have made, and I've heard it with my own ears. So basically, what I would like to do is hear from the administration their view of these acoustic challenges, what we could do, you know, on a bigger term basis, but are there some specific tactical things that we could do to help with noise? With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like
to... I'm surprised that you were there and could hear the noise concerns, because when I'm there, I can't hear anything.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead. So, good morning.
Good morning. Adrian Morales, Facilities Director. We agree with Commissioner Samuelin's assessment. So you have a facility that's used for, you know, our senior programs, but also for community meetings and stuff of that nature. It has very high ceilings. You know, it's surrounded by glass, and the noise doesn't travel well in a positive way. So what we're recommending is a sound system to be installed, and also some noise absorption paneling, and that costs about $80,000. Based on the supply chain that we've been discussing with some of the vendors that produce this, we feel it probably best to submit it in our capital budget for fiscal year 23. And work on that to have it for next year, early part of next year, October, November. We're confident we can get that project completed fairly quickly, but the cost is about $80,000 to get a good sound system and have you know, these acoustic challenges resolved.
These would be panels in the ceiling or?
Right. We did something similar in the community room at the police department. They basically just... It prevents the noise from bouncing off the walls, and you don't hear the echo. So seniors play bingo. They have, you know, salsa classes. They have all of those types of programs, and because of the high ceilings and it's just surrounded by glass, it just doesn't do well. So we're confident that that system would eliminate some of those challenges and also make for a better forum for community meetings and stuff of that nature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Adrian, thank you for that. That sounds like the right next steps. The one thing I would just add to the equation, is there anything we could do, and you don't have to answer on the spot, but looking at the actual chairs and the feet of the chairs, I actually think when people are moving them, that is a concern. I'm wondering if we can go to Home Depot and buy some quieter feet that would help. Do you see the type of tactical idea that I'm putting on the table?
So we'll take a look. I wasn't familiar that was an issue, but I would certainly have staff take a look and see if we can, you know, maybe get some rubber stops or something like that. So I'll talk to Victor and his team and see if there's some quick wins. We could probably do that this year just to help. The cost shouldn't be too much. They don't have that many chairs out there. But
much appreciated. What do you need from us today?
For this specific project, my recommendation is to move this to the capital budget submittal process, which will start May 20th, John, and then go through that process, and we'll prioritize it as best we can.
So moved.
Okay, and yeah, so we'll show that unanimously. John, please consider it, do more than consider it in the capital budget. Please include it, and if anyone in that's not here, the other members object, they'll let us know when we go through our budget cycle. So thank you so much for your time. Okay. Commissioner Ariel, let's take your item number four, discuss launching health and wellness incentive initiative. I'll let you tee that up.
Yeah, thanks. I think John Rebar's coming up. I think I speak for all of us, you know, when I say that, you know, we're all committed to our park system, our programming of our parks and public spaces, particularly with respect to our residents and trying to get folks out enjoying our parks, fresh air, our beautiful beaches. Our Parks Department, led by John Rebar, do an amazing job. We have also talked about, specifically in the Ocean Drive area, in addition to trying to activate it through arts and culture, also through health and wellness initiatives. And then the thought became, okay, you know, if we concentrate really in activating and programming, you know, sort of the Ocean Drive Loomis Park area, you know, what about also the entire city? You know, looking at this whole thing holistically, what are we doing? What more can we do to make Miami Beach not just a fun and sun destination, but really about a lifestyle brand year-round for residents and tourists around health and wellness, trying to attract, you know, marquee events that promote either competition or community involvement. I was last night at in downtown for the corporate run. You know, trying to make Miami Beach more than just a place for, you know, relaxing on the beach or sun and fun. And John, I think you're going to talk to us about, you know, how we might do that, maybe expanding the folks that run our concessions now and have them maybe take on some of this responsibility in addition to what your department already does, but also maybe put it in the hands of a private operator.
Good morning, Good morning. Thank you very much. Yes, so as I mentioned before, we have a few different tiers, things we're doing called grassroots efforts directly from the department. Less expensive. We may have a little slight budget increase next year as we add some programs, but things like that include we're starting a senior soccer program with a partner next week. We're looking to do a battle of the gyms, looking to add skateboard classes, soccer for younger children, preschool. So those are more, you know, health and fitness for the community, and it's citywide. We're also looking to do, we're hoping to work with get a battle of the gyms locally, and also to see if we could get some sort of like punch card program to promote fitness by allowing residents or participants to maybe go in and sample other gyms and classes. And those are some things we're working on. And as directed by the committee, we're also speaking to one of our partners, Boucher Brothers. I don't have a formal proposal now, but when I bring something, I want it to be cooked. I'm excited about what they're offering. We just want to make sure it could work. Talking about maybe some pickleball courts there. I'm a little concerned about the wind coming off of the ocean, because it is a wiffle ball that's used. If we're going to do what I want to do it right and not put something in a bad place. Cycling, stationary cycling, yoga places, really activating that area through a partner who already exists. Additionally, working with on larger scale events, maybe things that would bring people in for the weekend, maybe put some heads in beds. And I do have a few slides if you'd like to see that, because what I'd like to leave with today is some form of sort of direction. These are big ticket items. So it's the perfect time with the budget coming up. So if there is an appetite from this committee to send something to the full commission, we could take a look. So I have three ideas to throw at you. So if communications could put up
you
on
could,
the slides.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks.
So one event, next slide, please. One event, this came from the GMCBB. This is a group from the Netherlands, and they do this King of the Court volleyball tournament. It's fast-paced. It's a combination of, you know, socialization, sport, entertainment, music. And this could be something, if there's an appetite, to look further into possibly on Loomis Park. We have a huge beach volleyball community there already. Next slide. You see, with this, they build a temporary stadium between 1,500 and 2,000 seats. You know, it's music, and they just run through these professional players. And I've seen some videos. It looks very entertaining. So at the end of this, I'd like to hear your appetite on this. Now, without negotiations, without getting into the whole, what could the GMCBB bring to it, sponsorship, this could be a $650,000 price tag, though, to bring something like this to the city. Okay, next slide. And then this might be more for local. I don't know what type of heads and beds this would bring, but this could be like a Sandex challenge. I'm not sure if we could do this on the beach, but I think we could achieve it on the spoil area. And this would be a fitness competition that ties in fitness, strength, but also the beach atmosphere that is Miami Beach. Something like this could be a two-day event, bring in about 500 participants. But again, this would all in marketing, construction, this could be upwards of $500,000. Next slide. So here's some samples of what that could look like from a fitness challenge standpoint. Next slide. And another idea, this really could be geared towards all ages and all abilities. They have these new inflatable obstacle courses that are huge and can be very challenging, but when not used for competition, there could just be public use hours where a child could go through and try his or her best. A non-athlete could try his or her best. Next slide. It's very large. It could be very competitive, or it could be entertaining. But just another idea. You know, there might be 100 ideas out there. I want to start bringing some things to you so I could get some guidance that I'm way off track. It's way too much money. But something like this also could cost, when you think of bringing that in, setting it up, the marketing, the management, could cost $300,000 for a 2 or 3 day event. So I'd love to get your feedback, good or bad or neutral, on the three things that I proposed.
Yeah, I mean, they all look cool. I mean, the price tag,
sort of really it's about ROI. You know, if it's the kind of thing that brings, you know, thousands of residents out, then good ROI, and or lots of tourists or guests, great ROI. If we can get sponsorship to deflect some of that, that helps. If, you know, this is good for the Miami Beach brand, that this is going to go, you know, sort of viral worldwide, I'm super interested in that. If we can't make a compelling case that, you know, any of these events will do those things, then I would be less supportive because the price tags aren't insignificant. But if we can get comfortable, at least if I can get comfortable that, yeah, we think, you know, we can anticipate, you know, lots of local support, or people will come in from, you know, out of town to participate in this, or we can get some corporate sponsorship to defray some of the cost, I'd be directionally supportive.
Okay. As it comes to filling hotel rooms, I do not believe that any of these three events go in that direction. But I do believe we'll draw people, even as, you know, maybe as far as Palm Beach or the Keys, to come to these things. It definitely would be a positive message for the brand. And even the volleyball tournament, that would be international attention because they do it internationally. But it also, it's, you're not talking about like a Bitcoin convention where we're going to just fill hotel rooms.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of these things, when you, any of our departments, but, you know, specifically you, because you're bringing these ideas to us, you know, I think if we can get marketing to co-present with you what a marketing plan would look like to promote these kinds of ideas. Because you mentioned things like, you know, Palm Beach. I know I, for one, when Palm Beach or Fort Lauderdale is doing an event, whether it's a concert or this type of activation, yeah, I'll hear about it on the radio, I'll see it on billboards, I'll see it virally, and it will draw me to those events. It's because you're marketing it. Personally, I don't have a feel for what we're doing in that regard, and I just feel that, you know, the commissioners know when events happening, but I don't know that these, you know, adjacent counties know. And so I'd like to know, you know, when we're going to do these types of events, even the previous presenter with Ocean Drive Concerts, you know, what are we doing to promote these things? And I'd like to have marketing say, this is going to be our plan, this is going to be our, you know, our budget to get this out to the community to attract people, because otherwise these events just won't be successful. So we need to know what marketing is going to do to support.
I'll absolutely get with Melissa and the team to come up with a plan.
Go ahead, Vice Chair.
Yes, sure. I'm fully supportive of the direction. I appreciate my colleague, Commissioner Ariola, bringing this forward. There's no better place to be fit and well than Miami Beach. And what's so amazing about this programming is it's good for our residents and our visitors, almost like our arts and culture. If you think about our cultural institutions, our residents get to enjoy it, but also it's a draw. There's not a conflict. It is a win-win. I like all the ideas on the table as well. I think the thing for me is important is participation by the residents. So I guess, for example, John, the King of Court, is that more spectator-oriented, or can folks actually get out there and hit the ball over the court?
That is something we're very preliminary in our conversations, but that is something I would like to ask for. It is spectator-driven. These are professional players. But since we have such a large volleyball community, I would love to see if we have the opportunity to utilize that space for our own local competition. Maybe it's separate than, you know, what they call the King of the Court, but they could participate. Our volleyball community could participate, or even the tri-county or regional area. But I don't have that information yet. I just have the desire to do it.
Yeah, so I appreciate the creative ideas. Strongly would underscore the importance of having participation.
Got it.
And that has got to be part of the mix. I also like the idea of having something that a programmer, a group has organized elsewhere. We shouldn't have to start with a blank sheet of paper. We're not the fitness, wellness promoter or event people. That we shouldn't be in that. But there should be events like King of Courts that are happening elsewhere that we're putting into here, maybe with a little Miami Beach flair of having the residents participate. But I'm very supportive. I agree. Obviously, we want marketing and our partners at the GMCVB at the table. So John, I don't know if you have a specific ask for us today, but I'd like to support the direction to keep the ball moving.
I think what would be helpful is, you know, going into the budget cycle from the committee standpoint, you know, what dollar amount. I believe I put $1 million in our preliminary request, not knowing a number. We could keep it like that, or you could obviously.
Members, what I'd like to see is a little bit more information, because I think we're all fully supportive. It sounds to me like we've got two possible tiers of events, and one on the lower scale economically in terms of our responsibility, fiscal responsibility, that would be more local events that wouldn't necessarily put heads in beds. But there are these national and international supporting events. I have a friend, I don't know why he does it, but they're triathlons, and he flies all over the country crawling through mud, and he pays to do it, right? And so I'd like, if we could, if you guys agree, if we could bring this back next month and ask you to specifically identify. I just Googled quickly, you know, outdoor challenges and got 29 things that popped up, right? So if you could come back, maybe work with marketing, maybe do some research and tell us what are the largest, you know, international or national outdoor challenges, you know, people rolling tires on the sand and things like that, and so forth. So we're not going to take public comment on this, but thank you. So is that okay, members, if we get, because I think we should get this into the budget cycle for next year.
Let me, just an observation. You know, I always sing your praises, John. You know, are we also tasking John's department correctly? You know, maybe some of this should fall on maybe economic development or another department to help you with this stuff. Because some of this, at least from my mind, I definitely want to activate for residents and to promote health and wellness for our residents. But some of this stuff that you're talking about, it, to me, is economic development. Because if you're bringing in international travel to participate in an event, it could be even more than $1 million, which is fine because the ROI there may be three or four times that, and maybe economic development should help. You know, you've got a lot to do. Maybe some of this should be shouldered by economic development to go partner with, whether it's the NCAA or other organizations out there, to say, look, Miami Beach is open for these types of events. Bring us your ideas.
Yeah, I think it's excellent. So if you'll work with economic development, John, let's bring this back next month.
Absolutely.
I don't think we need so much more focus on the local stuff, the low dollar. I think the committee probably would like to, I don't know if the number's 100,000 on that piece of it to sponsor some local stuff, but the big ticket items, work with economic development. Okay. I'd also suggest that you talk to marketing because, you know, we just got a new beverage sponsor, Red Bull, and part of their pitch was they wanted to participate in events and do things on the beach and so forth, and they may be willing to step up and sponsor something like that. And they do these all over the country, so all over the world, really. So they may have ideas as well. But I'd like to hear some more specifics on what's going around in the world. And the other thing is some of these challenges get booked 2 years in advance. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to do something, we need to get it on now. Go ahead.
Fully agree with my colleagues' comments. And one thing I just want to underscore, this is a strategic initiative. We are making a bold play to elevate our position in the health and wellness space. The event is the catalyst and the launch for that. So I want the focus to be on the overall strategy and use the event as that catalyst to tell that story. But great comments from my colleagues. Excited to have the conversation next month.
Sure. I'd also add, you know, let's use our convention center as an asset for this too, and so maybe engage with Spectra. And I'll leave it to, I don't know if Eric here or Alina, you know, to maybe figure out what, you know, who the right department heads to spearhead. But, you know, Spectra can go out and find events, bodybuilding events, CrossFit events to use our convention center to bring in these types of organizations that, you know, promote health and wellness.
Yeah, that'd be great. So next month, John, the goal is to come back and at least – give us a flavor for the types of things that are going on nationally, internationally with these challenges, and, you know, maybe some history on what it cost a city to bring them in. Obviously, there's some local participation and something like that, but we need some more information, and I think we probably want to fund you there. Okay?
Right. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
We'll close. And then we have a time certain at 10 a.m. We're going to call up item 12. discuss a request for the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce for the City of Miami Beach to provide a one-time contribution of $100,000 in funding towards the cost of implementing a ProStart hospitality training program at Miami Beach Senior High. Is there someone from staff that has been working on that? Hi, Leslie. You're recognized.
Good morning. Leslie Rosenfeld, Chief Learning Officer. The item you have in front of you is a request for partnership from the Miami Beach Chamber to support their effort to provide additional programming at Miami Beach Senior High School for a culinary program. The request is a match to funds that they have been raising, and I know we have Aaron Tandy from the Chamber here to speak on behalf of the specifics of the program and the Chamber's ask, and I think there are some other members as well.
Okay, Mr. Tandy, you are recognized.
Thank you. I guess I'll use this mic. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, obviously, Mark, Ricky, thank you very much for having us here. So, as you know, the Chamber's been very involved in promoting education programs on Miami Beach and for our feeder pattern schools, and we think this is a great program. We're here today seeking your support for, as Leslie said, a one-time grant for $100,000 to support upgrading. So just so we're clear, ProStart is a national program. It provides a two-year certificate program that is nationally acclaimed, and it's administered by the National Restaurant Association. The Culinary Arts Program prepares high school students for well-paying jobs right out of high school in the hospitality industry. And Miami Beach, obviously, is an epicenter of hospitality. This is a natural fit. Currently, the high school has a ProStart program, but this is about upgrading the facilities. So we're here to ask for $100,000 to support efforts. We've raised money, and you'll hear about that if in specifics, but 9 months ago, Mr. Andres Acion, who's here, and we'll get a chance to speak, brought the idea to the Chamber's Education Foundation, Mr. Bruce Gould, to explain the tremendous value of the program, not only to our students, but obviously to the hospitality industry, and also pointed out that, unfortunately, our facilities at Beach High are woefully inadequate. They haven't been upgraded in years. And so the school was struggling with that. Andres worked diligently with Bruce and our foundation, with the school administration, to gain support from the superintendent as well as the facilities management staff. Both Bruce and Andres have made not only commitment of their time, but of monetary commitment to this program. Our partnership is with, obviously, the school board, who's going to upgrade the facilities in the room, and then we're asking for these funds to help buy the equipment and to help support the education piece of the program. So with that, with your indulgence, I'd like to ask Mateo Lopez, who's aide to our school board member, Lucia Baez-Geller, to come up to just talk to you about what the superintendent and the school board has committed to our schools.
Okay, great. Thank you. You're recognized. And Andres, I'd like to tee you up after him if you could speak on it, okay? Go ahead. You're recognized.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mateo Lopez, and I am here on behalf of District 3 school board member, the Honorable Lucia Baez-Geller. While the board member was unable to be here today, she has been working tirelessly with our community partners to bring this project to fruition. Miami-Dade County Public Schools is grateful for our partners in both the private and public sectors for their dedication to ensuring that our students have the best education and real-world opportunities. This initiative will not only provide them with an enriching classroom experience, but also set them up for future success in the hospitality industry. Thus, MDCPS has committed to almost $1 million for electrical, mechanical, and plumbing upgrades to the physical structure. With the full support from our superintendent, his cabinet, and district staff, we are fully committed to finalizing this project to providing our students with endless possibilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Andres, please. I first heard about this project with you, and I met with you and Jerry Levin months ago, and I know you worked a lot on it. Tell us about
it. Yeah, it's the reason why I wanted to start working on this is because when I went to Beach High and I saw the facility and the state that it was in, I felt that it was imperative that we have a high standard for training the students that are going to Beach High that want to go into the hospitality space. Obviously, we are the capital of hospitality here in South Florida, and we're not giving the adequate training to students who would like to enter the workforce directly right out of high school or going to higher learning at a college. And so the facilities that were there were old, you know, stove tops that were that are being used in a home, not a commercial quality material. As a matter of fact, there was an oven donated by Adrian Gonzalez, which is here, which is like that Rolls Royce of ovens, which was sitting there for a very long time. Now it's the only thing that it's like a wow factor in there that is functioning due to Adrian's gracious donations. So we need to really have a facility that is a world-class wow facility that matches with the world-class hospitality that we have here in our city to be able to train these students to be able to hit the workforce. So many restaurants here in town are starving for good staff to work at our venues, and they don't have it. So it's the right fit to be able to train them to be able to work within and live within our own city. Great thing is that FIU is also going to be partnering and helping, and the hospitality board of FIU that runs obviously Food and Wine Festival and everything else are all on board, and they're looking to help. So it's going to be a great partnership with everybody involved.
Thank you. And I know this is a match, but it's far in excess of a one-to-one in that I think your 100,000 is being matched by a much greater number that I just heard from the school board, million. But tell us about the other supporters.
So there's
before you ask that question, just let me make sure we're clear. What the school board is committing to is that in order for the new equipment to go in, all of the electrical and plumbing work in
they have to retrofit everything.
Have to be retrofit.
Right.
They're committing to do all of that work.
Right.
So that's the $750 to $1 million price tag. What we're here today about is having you help us match funds that we've raised.
For equipment. What I want to hear about is who are your other funding sources for these hard dollars?
So go ahead.
So Mr. Hospitality, which has been in our community for a very long time and is also in the city of Miami, has committed to a range anywhere between $75,000 and $100,000. Russell Gobbett has committed to $10,000. I've committed to funds as well. There's other board members who've committed to funds.
So you know Bruce Gould, who I believe is on the the web on the Zoom call, and is the head of our education foundation, has committed $50,000 of his own money. We have committed $15,000 from the education foundation itself. Jerry Libin has secured another $40,000 in grants. So we're right at the cusp, Commissioner of Chairman, of about $200,000 with your gift or contribution, we would be at $300,000. We've worked with Edward Don and Company. They're an equipment manufacturer. Mr. Hospitality put us in touch with them. We probably need about $300,000 and $325,000 for the actual equipment, and then there's about $50,000 that we'll need for sort of education programming. But I want to say, Andres mentioned it, Michael Chang, who you may know is the director of the FIU Hospitality School, has agreed to provide guest lecturers for the first year once the equipment is in to help train the students and also talk about, obviously, hospitality industry programming. And some of our members at the Chamber have committed to also being subject matter experts, as you would, in terms of our hospitality industry. So we think this is a great public-private partnership, and also, obviously, with the school board.
And should be an example for a lot of our other schools around the county to follow suit doing this. And obviously, we have our convention center right next door that these kids could also be trained to go and work directly at the convention center, which is right in their backyard, and so many other facilities here in the city. So it's gonna be a big beneficial.
Let me ask a couple of questions.
Sure.
When do you need the money? Yesterday or
yesterday? Because the reason why we need the money is that it's a lag time in order to put in these orders, and they take 4, 5, 6 months. And we're already in the summer. We want to try to get this thing up and running as fast as possible.
Okay. And John, funding source. This is unfunded. So would you have a recommendation if the committee recommends? Would this be something we could do out of resort taxes?
This is probably not eligible for resort taxes. We'd probably have to go to the general fund contingency.
So given that it's a hospitality training program, right, and people would come out probably working in the hospitality industry that would service the tourism industry, do you think there's an opportunity that we could relook at that and see if a portion of it could come out of resort taxes or
We can look at it. It doesn't really fit our normal definition of being. In other words, the tourists would not come here to benefit from the program. But okay. You know, we can look at it. But I'm hoping that with our second quarter projections come out, we might have some additional savings in the general fund.
Okay, members, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm fully supportive and grateful for the efforts put forward in this collaborative effort. We can't do enough to get the next generation ready to go. This is on strategy for our economy. And I'm especially appreciative of the private sector, public sector. If my math is right, I heard around 300,000, a couple hundred thousand coming from the private sector, 100,000 asked. About 33%, and that's goodness. So we're filling that gap. We're building on the work that's done, and I'll move the item.
Okay, so I'll second the item. And you're okay with this? Okay, so all I would ask is, John, we're going to move this back to the commission for ratification, hopefully. All I would ask is we want at least $100,000 in commitment from your funding sources in order to receive ours, okay?
It's done already.
I think you're probably going to have, you'll have 300. But once you have 100 in the bank, I think we would be willing to release our 100 if the commission agrees, the full commission agrees. And, John, I'd like to move this back. Can we move this back for May 4th and get this on consent on the agenda?
Commissioner, I would also like to suggest, in order to ensure that our investment and the investment of our community members, our partners, is fully utilized as a condition of our commitment that the school sustain the classes in the master schedule for at least 5 years upon completion of the kitchen, and so that this becomes a preferred elective for the students, so that they know it's available and that they are educated on the fact that it is available, so that we are offering between 5 and 6 classes each year for students to avail themselves to.
By the way, we're going to do some cool marketing. The students are going to be all over this. They're going to want to take this class.
Yeah. These classes have been offered for a while.
Yeah, they currently have the class. It's not a credited through, like, ProStart the way that we're going to be implementing it now, which they do have a curriculum. It's not as robust as it's going to be, and obviously the facility is not. They're not training in the equipment that they're going to be using when they hit the hospitality real world. So we're going to change that so that they're training in equipment that they're going to be using in the real world. And so, you know, perfect example was when FIU brought in like Dave Grubman to, you know, work on the hospitality program and brought in the whole entire buzz factor. We're going to be doing the same thing with guest chefs and everything else, and it's going to be a wild program.
With your indulgence, the only other thing is ProStart, supported by the Florida Restaurant and Lodging.
Go ahead, take the microphone.
Sorry, ProStart is supported by the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, and obviously our own Deanne Connolly Graham sits on that board, and she's been empowered to just talk to you about the support that the Florida Restaurant Association will be giving. So, Deanne. Just step up.
Okay, good morning. You're recognized.
Thank you. We are delighted that the Miami Beach High School has reactivated their ProStart agreement and have been teaching the program this past year. We are hopeful that they will seek to become a premier ProStart school that will qualify them to enter the $50,000 kitchen makeover in the future. So we have a copy of the benchmarks that they need to achieve this, and we'll be happy to share that with the school and with this body. The FRLA Education Foundation provides millions of dollars in mini grants, scholarships, stipends, and support for more than 235 schools and 35,000 students participating in the ProStart and HTM high school programs. FRLA chapters throughout the state also help their local schools with scholarships, textbooks, curriculum, equipment, and more. The Miami chapter supports 32 schools in Miami-Dade, participating in the 11 ProStart and 21 HTM programs, as well as the Academy of Hospitality and Tourism. Annually, we hold a teacher summit to provide the instructors an opportunity to share their needs with our board of directors. The needs of all the schools are overwhelming, and we dispense equitably to help as many as possible. Additionally, we award more than $50,000 in scholarships annually. We also provide substantial support to FIU, Miami-Dade College, FAU, and St. Thomas. We wholeheartedly appreciate your support of Miami Beach High School, and we will lend equal to what we share with the other schools to remain fair and equitable for all our programs. Of note, Hialeah High School won the ProStart Culinary State competition and are going to nationals. They won this past year. There's no reason why Miami Beach High can't win in future years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Aaron, you put so much into this. You heard the language Leslie offered. I didn't sense any objection.
No, we don't have any objection.
Okay, so
at
I'd
all.
Just like to update the motion to include the language Leslie put forward.
That'd be fine. And I think that one of the things you said about having your money and our money, make sure that you can see it, makes perfect sense to us as well. We have no problem with that as well.
Okay, great. Right. So, John, let's show this move back to the commission with a request to ratify the recommendation, and I'd like to get it on the agenda for May 4th on consent. With that, we'll close this item. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the positive comments. We look forward to supporting the program and appreciate all the work you guys have spent months as a collective team effort to get it to where it's at now, and I think it's going to be really good for the community. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for your support, members of the committee. And I want to thank our partners and the superintendent and everybody else. Thank you so much for your time, and we really appreciate it.
And thank you, and thank school board member Lucia Baez for supporting this as well. With that, the item is closed. We're calling item number three, a discussion of the City of Miami Beach Committee for Quality Education's motion requesting the mayor and city commission make a priority that students' safety during drop-off and pick-up at Miami Beach Senior High be secured by urging our transportation and mobility department to come up with a working plan. I'd like to hear from the administration. Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
You're recognized.
For the record, Josio Ferrer, Assistant Director of Transportation. This item presented to you today is an update on an item that was presented in the last meeting, in which we presented to you a concept that had been discussed with Miami-Dade County Public Schools and the county on a preliminary basis, and your direction at that point had been to approach them to split essentially or fund the project in three. As a partnership, and we have had a meeting with we had a very positive meeting with Miami-Dade County Public Schools. They are actually going back to their folks and to discuss the funding. We also had a very positive meeting as well with them this morning at the school, in which we observed the conditions there, and we're going to come back again the week after next to go ahead and take a look at them again. They feel that there are some improvements that could be done to the concept, but they think that there's merit to the concept, so they are looking for funding to be able to partner with us on it. We're still awaiting discussion as well with the county, Department of Transportation and Public Works, and what their role is going to be, and their Vision Zero program. One other thing that was brought up this morning that could be almost an immediate improvement, and we're going to be studying it a little bit more by Miami-Dade County Public Schools based on the observations that we're seeing today, is the installation of a barrier right behind the sidewalk in order to lead the students that are being dropped off on Dade Boulevard, instead of crossing through the bus loop or crossing through Dade, actually leading them to the available crosswalks. So that's something that Miami-Dade County Public Schools is looking into, and they'll come back to us, but that's something they can do almost immediately. At the next meeting, I expect to have the commitment commitment of funding from Miami-Dade County Public Schools to present to you all, and a final number on what our commitment would need to be depending on what the Department of Transportation and Public Works is committing in terms of funding.
Okay. Tell me, who are all the partner agencies that have to be involved in this? I know some are looking for some funding from the city, but beyond the city, who are all of the entities that have to sit at the table?
At the table, it would be, of course, the City of Miami Beach is an interested party, but also Miami-Dade County Public Schools and the Miami-Dade County Department of Transportation and Public Works.
Okay. And do we know what kind of money we're talking about at this point?
We're talking about $525,000 thereabouts, so it's about $175,000 per party if it's all divided equally.
$525,000, and where did the estimate come from? Is that
the estimate was an estimate based on the concept developed by the city. It's not a final estimate; it's a concept estimate, but we worked with a contractor to develop that estimate.
Okay, and that would do what? Add a drop-off lane?
That would add a drop-off lane on Dade Boulevard adjacent to the bus loop What we found, the issue is that many parents drop off the street,
right.
And therefore, you know, students cross the street, essentially mid-block. Some parents even drop off on the south side of the street. Now, the drop-off that we're proposing, it's in effect trying to affect that behavior in a positive manner and get parents, you know, to drop off more comfortably from this loop. There are still going to be some less prudent, you know, parents that will still continue to drop off from the south side of the street. But, you know, with this amenity, we hope to affect the behavior in a positive manner.
Okay. And have you scheduled meetings with the other parties to talk about funding?
Yes, we have had meetings with both parties. We're still remaining one more meeting with the Department of Transportation and Public Works in Miami-Dade County. But Miami-Dade County Public Schools is going back and talking to their work program and their funding folks to see what availability of funding they have.
Okay. And so do you think you'll be ready to talk about this next month with more specificity?
Yes, sir. We should have whatever funding commitment has been identified, or at least in concept from both parties.
Okay. I got to say, I don't think this is moving fast enough. This has been before us for months now, 3 or 4 months at least, I think, or a couple of months, that we got the resolution. So I want your commitment that you're going to get these meetings done and come back before for the meeting next month. Do you think that's possible?
Yes, sir. I believe that's possible. We actually took a little bit of time, you know, on their side. We had the meeting almost right after the last meeting, but they are looking into their funding, and that's what has taken a little bit of time on their side.
I fully appreciate that. It's a lot of money, so it can't be done overnight. But, John, I think we'll probably want to consider this in the budget cycle, but we're going to need to know whether or not we're going to have the participation from these partners. What do you think about this?
Yeah, the timing that we're talking about is we usually have a capital budget workshop in June. So ideally, if we could, at the next meeting in May, have some more specificity, it would definitely help. And at the latest, hopefully June, so that at the July other workshops, we could kind of provide an update at that point, because I'm sure we'd probably want to prioritize this request above some others.
Okay, so if it's okay, members, what we're going to do is continue it until next month. And with that, we'd like to ask you to come back with an update. Hopefully, you'll be able to do some arm twisting from our partners and get some commitment or close to a commitment for some funding so that we'll be prepared for no later than June. Is that fair?
That's fair, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Have a good one.
We'll close that item. And we have... Commissioner Arriola, you have item number 2. Why don't you go ahead and tee that up for us?
Yeah, this is something we took up several months back under the sort of auspices of, you know, how do we attract and or retain businesses here to Miami Beach? And in particular, we had a situation where Crude Hospitality, I think all of us know that entity was contemplating moving over to Wynwood, I believe, and I think our economic development team reached out to them and tried to ascertain, you know, what was their primary motivation. One of the sticking points for them was the lack of parking for their employees, so we tasked our parking department as well as economic development team to figure out ways to maybe make some parking available to them so that we could retain this organization, which, you know, is homegrown to Miami Beach, has a lot of business here and continues to invest in our community so that we wouldn't lose them to Wynwood. So I think, Raquel, do you have an update for us?
Sure. So
you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. So when this item first came before you in September and October of last year, at that time, Groot was considering a move to Wynwood. They have since, after the discussion at those meetings, they have committed to lease a space of 7,800 square feet at 1680 Meridian, and they had initially requested 30 parking access cards. The parking department has separated 20 access cards. We now have the fiscal impact for you to consider. When we discussed it before, it was speculative as to how many parking access cards would be available. Now that we have this information, We wanted to discuss the fiscal impact and whether or not the Finance Committee would recommend this, as the City Commission would need to appropriate funds for this purpose. We do not currently have a funding source for an incentive like this, but our Job Creation Incentive Program does provide for financial assistance for existing companies in the city, and we would offer it for 3 years. So like that program, we wanted to offer a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year option so that you could see how it might compare if you decided to recommend in this direction. We do not have a policy in place that would allow for additional companies to benefit from this incentive. We did present in concept a policy recommendation in October, and it did not seem like we were prepared to move forward in that direction, but that the committee wanted to assist Groot in whatever way possible. So we're here seeking direction as to how to fund this. And
so, Monica, I'd like to hear from you on this as well. Is that okay? Because, as Raquel just said, we don't have a policy on this. Are we getting other requests? Are we getting, what is the demand? I think it could be high, right? So tell us about that, if there are other companies that are looking to expand that may not be in a position to make a commitment yet because of parking limitations or anything related to that.
So good morning, Mr. Morning. Chair, Vice Chair, Commissioner Arriola, Monica Beltran, Parking Director. And so, yes, we do have a high amount of requests or number of requests related to parking, in particular for these buildings like a Meridian, where they have office space to offer but no parking. And an office space with no parking is not a good combination. So we, like I promised before, I've looked at the demand for parking, identifying that the majority of it for access cards is day parking. Very mindful of supporting Lincoln Road so that, you know, there is sufficient parking to support the businesses on Lincoln Road. So when it came, so what I've done is I've increased, as we said before, the number of access cards issued. And I expect that as requests come in, it'll be a challenge, but we would have to work to balance the business requests versus our waiting list. So we'll work with each one of them. For Groot in particular, as requested before, we had identified 20 cards. We just cannot issue them for free.
Right, because of our bonding. So, yeah. Commissioner, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Raquel and Monica. I'm a big believer in targeted high-value incentives. I do believe that if we can help existing businesses continue to make Miami Beach their home and grow, then there are situations where it's win-win. What I said last time, though, I'm going to sort of underscore, is I think we need to be fair and consistent, and that means we need a policy. And everyone's got to know there's a policy, and they get to apply and meet the criteria or not meet the criteria. So that to me is the most important thing we need to be in place. And then, of course, we would need to understand the fiscal impacts.
So a couple things, we got to find a funding source. What's the timing of this, John? Because what I might do so that we develop a policy and we can talk about it here. I happen to know that, obviously, Mr. Grupman and Groot have a number of projects here, restaurants, collaborations with hotels, and they continue to invest. I would proffer that any kind of policy that we would explore where we're making this kind of commitment is not just jobs, but also investment. Like, we can come up with a priority list where, it's even point-based system where it's not just jobs and high-paying jobs, but, we're going to be sponsoring local activities or we're going to be investing in future projects in the city. Well, you would get more points or be more prioritized than maybe someone who's just providing jobs, let's say. And also targeting what kind of industries we want to have here. You know, I was fully supportive of this because of the commitment to Miami Beach, because it's homegrown. The principal lives here. Half his company was sold to Live Nation, which is another strategic partner. That said, we do need a policy, okay? So we can do that right now, or we can take this, approve this now, and then develop a policy in the next couple of weeks or months.
Where have we started working on a policy, or do we have a concept paper? Or
right, we presented the concept in October of last year, where we indicated that we could subsidize parking. So whether or not the city would have parking available, we would fund the company based on the value of the parking spaces, and perhaps even go a little bit higher in the event that they would need to go to the private parking facilities. So it was sort of a payment in lieu of parking if we did not have it available.
So, and I apologize, I don't remember the details of that. Was it some high-level points, or did you put the words down on what you think a policy might look like? Or
we did talk a little bit about the criteria. We do need to focus on industries that we want to promote. So we talked about the restaurant and hospitality industry, given that we were discussing Groot and wanting to make sure we fully supported our biggest industry here in the city. We would also want to make sure that we have a lease in place that has been executed to show that the company will be there for a long period of time. If the company is indeed expanding and adding employees, we would on an annual basis want to see their payroll records to ensure that they are adding and maintaining employees. We would definitely consider capital improvements as Commissioner Areola recommended. That was not something that we discussed in October, but that is something that we could incorporate.
So yes, we need a policy. I think we all agree with that. Specifically with this particular instance, what is the fiscal that we're talking about? How much? There was a request for 30 cards, and we've identified 20 cards.
Sure.
And I know, you know, we have covenants that don't allow us to give parking, so they would have to be. So how much money are we talking about?
So at $108 per space, which is the current amount, and this would not include tax because the city would be paying for it. For 1 year, that's $25,920. 2 years, $51,840. And 3 years, $77,760.
And has Groot already, they've expanded their facility already, so we have evidence of that, right?
I have asked for a executed lease. I have not yet received one. I think that should be a stipulation if the incentive were to move forward.
And what is the status? The request is there, but the cards haven't been provided yet because you're waiting for input from us. Is that right?
Right. We would need a way to fund the access cards because, as Monica mentioned, they're an enterprise fund.
Got it. So I really would like to see a policy because I want to be consistent, but I don't want to hold this up. So I would be inclined to support this on a one-time basis, but move forward with a policy and having the policy in place no later than October 1st. That would be kind of my feeling. And they would also have to provide proof that they have the lease and the expansion of the employees. I don't know, members, what do you think about it? Tell me.
It's a tough call because, you know, it's an important employer. We like the expansion. I agree with my colleague on capital investment as well. I always think the policy and the fairness comes first because others would have the opportunity. Raquel, let me ask you this question. From an economic development standpoint, if it was the will of this body today or at some point to make the level of investment that you talked about, what else on top of what you already said, documentation, the lease, the jobs, what else would make it so that you would say this is in the best long-term interest of the community?
Right. Well, I would want to dive a little deeper into the jobs. Being that this is a hospitality company, we're not sure that the jobs are high-wage jobs, are mid-range, or, you know, we're not sure, you know, what the spread is across the jobs that are being added. Because they are expanding their headquarters, I would imagine that the level of employee would be skilled, educated, and garner, you know, the types of salaries that we would want to see in our community. So I would want to go a little bit deeper there to ensure that, you know, it's not necessarily just for the addition of, you know, restaurant workers and, you know, folks that support the industry across the board, but I would want to make sure that there are some managerial level employees that are being added, so things of that nature.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may just follow up. I would be of the mind to allow our very capable economic development and parking team to take one more stab at this, to get to the level of detail on this potential transaction, and then say, is that a model that we would apply for the next five folks that came in? And, of course, put a budget number to it, right? Because we can't do it infinitely. So if they did that work and they had a model and they said, yes, the next five companies come in, ask that same thing, we're going to stand in front of you and we're going to say that's in the best long-term interest of the community, that's something I could get my head around as opposed to approving one without that analysis.
May I add, Commissioner? In the case of Groot and possibly in the case of other companies, there are other considerations that we may not be able to quantify in a very tangible way. We do know that Groot brings a lot to the city of Miami Beach in terms of activities and branding, and, you know, it's hard to put a dollar value on that, but I think that should be considered as well. The reach, you know, the impressions, the, you know, the brand capacity, I think we should also consider those elements, even though it's a little bit more difficult to you know, quantify.
Through the chair, I agree. There's always sort of economic and non-economic factors. There are things that can be quantified, things that can't be. But, you know, what you talked about, strategic impact, marketing impressions, that is relevant. Mm-hmm. And if in a qualitative basis that moves this one to a higher standard, you should do exactly what you said.
So what about, have we thought about as an incentive program maybe offering 100% the first year, 50% the second year, and 25% the third year? Because if we're going to have a policy and we're going to set up a fixed amount of dollars and we want other people to be eligible, you know, in year two, if there'll be less funds going to one, it'll free up more funds going to another. Is that something you think we could consider?
You're absolutely right, and that was proposed in October to have a system where we wean them off of the support in order to allow for more companies to be added. So, yes, we could do that.
So do you think it's possible, as Commissioner Samuelin suggested, that we do a little bit more work on this and come back next month and specifically on this? But I'd like to see some top level bullets on what a policy might look like, not necessarily have the entire thing written. Is that, Commissioner Ariel, is that something that
we bring it back and let's vote on policy? Look, I would like to approve this because I think they're relying on us to do this. I mean, I think one would assume from our discussions that we were supportive of getting this done. Number one. Number two, we definitely need a policy. And number three, I just want to add, I think we've all done really good thus far in the last 6-7 months of addressing how we're going to bring businesses to Miami Beach with the topic we're going to talk about shortly with the Lincoln Lane project, as well as, you know, some of the other development, P3 development opportunities we're doing, like in Collins Avenue with the parking garage over there. So we are actually doing some things now to try to address parking requirements as well as developing office space mm-hmm. that will eventually bring businesses here. So I would like to try to get this part done, but then also have a policy going forward to guide us.
So you would like to move this out of committee to the commission for ratification?
I would, yes.
Okay, I'm going to second that. We're going to move it back to the commission for this specific one. I think before it gets back to the commission, you all need to think about what we're what we're going to take to the commission in terms of whether or not it will be this tiered approach, because I do think, and maybe you can talk to this organization, I do think that would be a fair way to do it. I like this idea of weaning people off of the assistance so that others are going to be, because I'm not going to be supportive of this type program if it's only for one entity. Mm. It's going to have to be a formal program for me to have continuing support on this. So, what I'd like is for you to come back next month with some details on what a program would look like, and it doesn't have to, if you have time, you can put it all in beautiful paragraphs. If not, let's get some top-level bullets, but let's go ahead and get this specific one back to the commission for conversation. I'm not willing today to say 100%. I want you all to have a meeting with them and see. I'm in favor of 100% the first year, 50% the second year, and 25% the third year. That would be my inclination. But let's get it back to the commission so we can take action on it, and then we'll come back next month with more details. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2 points. One, as we think about criteria which would earn this, I think we should think about a participant's willingness to help in the marketing efforts. So some sort of joint press release, a video, anything that they could do to sort of dial up so that good message comes out. And so for today, colleagues, let's go 2-1. I reserve the right when it gets to the commission, and if I see that policy and they line up, I might be there. But for today, let's go 2-1.
Sounds great. Do you have everything you need?
Just for clarification, we're going to the commission with Groot, not with the policy, but just for Groot, and then we'll come back to finance with the policy, and if recommended, the policy would be recommended to the city commission.
Exactly, and perhaps a policy we would implement October 1st, and then we would consider funding during our budget cycle on how much money we'd like to put in the bucket, probably on a first-come, first-served basis with certain caps on number of spaces per entity. And then I think before May 4th on this specific request, you'll need to think about and maybe talk to, I think it's Groot, this idea of 100%, 50%, and 25%, because I think I personally would like to see that as part of the overriding policy, just as other companies could come into the fold on that. So, John, do you have everything you need?
The truth is I'm a little confused as to what's going to commission and what's coming back to the
Okay. So what's going to commission is a specific funding request to support the request for these 20 tickets, because the 20 parking, because we can't provide those for free, so we would have to fund those. And so it's going to commission to see if there would be ratification, and before it gets to commission, Raquel's going to have a conversation with this entity and also with the administration about whether or not you would be recommending 100% for all 3 years, or if you would, as I would recommend, 100% in the first year, 50% in the second year, and 25% in the third year. Because I'd like to be consistent, because I would like to see that as part of an overriding policy. So that will go to commission on May 4th on this specific request. And then coming back in May will be another discussion on what a policy, an overriding policy, would look like for the city of Miami Beach, and with that a recommendation about how much money we would be talking about, if we want to put $300,000 or $400,000 or $200,000, whatever the number is, that we would want to recommend, that we would have to consider as part of our annual budget.
So the item going to full commission on May 4th, we would try to do the best we could to make sure that whatever that recommendation is consistent with the potential policy that we're still developing?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Well, that's exactly right.
Considering that the May 4th agenda is out right now, I'm not sure if we'll have the time necessary to get it back.
So let's get it on the next. We'll get it on the next one then. Whatever the meeting is after the next, that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, show that 2-1. We'll close that item. We've got a little bit more time before our next time certain. So, Commissioner Samuel, I'm going to recognize you on item 6. You've got a discussion item on the Julia Tuttle. Go ahead.
Yeah, this will be a brief verbal update. I invite our stimulus from our transportation department here. We all know regional connectivity, providing public transportation solutions, is so important. We've been pushing this, it seems like, a lot of years now, and we have something happening. It's actually out there. So, Milos, we really are looking for two things. One, what's happening? Two, how can people take advantage of it? And three, what do you need from us today to accelerate progress?
Sure, thank you very much. Good morning, Milos Majstorovic, Transportation Manager for the City of Miami Beach. We continue to work with the county on implementation of the Beach Express North service. While the launch of this long-term service is still pending some improvements along Juliet Adler Causeway in connection with the improving inside shoulder, the county has started interim service in December of 2021 along the outside shoulder. We have Linda Morris with Miami-Dade County Transportation and Public Works. She's Chief of Planning and Scheduling, and she has a short presentation for you, and she can provide an update on both the short-term service and the long-term service.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you. This should be pretty brief. Again, I'm Linda Morris. I am the Chief of Service Planning and Scheduling at the Department of Transportation and Public Works at Miami-Dade County. Hopefully you can see my screen. And just go through here. So there's a few phases of the project. The first is an FDOT funded project to use the bus on shoulder. So we're looking at we're using the outside shoulder on Juliet Adler Causeway, and we are allowed to travel up to 35 miles an hour within certain parameters in the morning and the afternoon peaks on the weekday only. This allows us to bypass traffic if there is and reduce delay for our bus passengers. We have some bus-only signs, and the Highway Patrol is monitoring it and enforcing it. This is the initial part of the project. Eventually, for the final phase, we'll be transitioning to the inside shoulder, and that's something that the FDOT's also working on right now, so that we could move to the inside shoulder in fall 2023. So the service that's on there right now is called the Tuttle Limited. It is very limited. It goes from Biscayne Boulevard to Mount Sinai only, so it's just couple of stops at Mount Sinai and a couple of stops on Biscayne Boulevard. And the intent is just to kind of see if the bus and shoulder route works. And we started this service in December last year. The intent is that we are going to be evaluating the service for 6 months or so. So in June, we'll make some decisions as to if we want to continue it. But as of now, or as of April 7th, in terms of ridership, we're averaging about 70 passengers on a weekday, but ranges from about 24 to 158. In terms of travel time, it takes about 22 minutes to go across, a round trip, and then 22 minutes in the peak round trip, and 14 minutes in the off peak. So you can see the impact of traffic there. We are also monitoring the usage of the shoulder, so our operations folks tell us that we're using it about two times a day, and mainly in the afternoon peak where we see the heaviest traffic. In terms of the speeds, we're seeing that the westbound speeds are the ones that are the worst. They drop below 20 miles an hour, but all other times we're looking at about 30 miles an hour that our buses are averaging. So that's the initial route. The final route is going to be going the Beach Express North route. So that'll go from Golden Glades all the way down to Miami Beach Convention Center, stopping at MIC and the Arlington Heights station, and also dropping off at Mount Sinai, Fountain Blue, and 28th Street as well. So we'll be looking at using the inside shoulders for local buses. In terms of the grant funding, so we're using TRIP funds, and so we're looking at having revenue service in 2027 when we can get those funding and get those buses in. And finally, just the final piece of this project is improving the parking and the bus bays at Mount Sinai. So the existing parking lot, we're looking to expand and add in a couple more bus bays at the center. So we've done an initial environmental analysis which showed no adverse impacts, and we're looking at about 83 parking spaces. And I believe that is all I have. Yes. Thank you for your time.
Just a quick comment. Please. Thank you very much for the presentation and the partnership. There's been a lot of talk about public transportation, smart, connecting the mainland to the beach, and we're doing it. We're doing it. And now this is a pilot. Let's learn from it and continue forward. I believe these quarterly updates are helpful, and I have no further comments today.
Okay, great. So the next, we'll schedule this for another update in the next quarter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let's. We got what we need, John. Can you put that on for the next quarterly update? Thank you. Let's call up, before our time certain, let's call up item 5, discuss vested employees in Tier B that have been rehired to Tier C. Who from the administration is going to be talking through that? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, and Commissioners. Sonia Walthour, Assistant Director for Human Resources. And this item was...
Pull the microphone a little bit closer to you so we can hear you. Thank
this
you.
This item was previously heard by this committee in September of 2021, and at that time you wanted us to come back and see if there's a way that employees who had worked under another tier, being Tier B, and leave the city and come back if there's a way that they can roll their two tiers together. And so I think what was presented previously was allowing employees to merge their time in the new tier, Tier C, with Tier B, and that wasn't something that, you know, you all wanted to entertain. So I believe the option that is presented today is an employee leaving Tier B, coming back under Tier C, and rolling their time from Tier B into Tier C, the new tier that they would be working in, and it wouldn't require any revesting.
Yeah, specifically, I remember I was not in favor of allowing someone to take to benefit from
right.
the higher percentage tier if they had left for all their time. But I'm very supportive of not requiring an employee to vest again a second time if they're already vested. So that's what I ask you all to look at. So have you looked at that? And is there a way that we can handle the administration of that?
Right. So the option was shared with the pension office. I believe they are on the phone and can answer any questions. And they didn't see a problem with the option that's presented to you today, where an employee who had worked under Tier B come back under Tier C, they would not have to revest, but they would be subject to the terms and conditions under Tier C, which means that you're, instead of retiring at age 55, you would have to retire at age 62. Your the COLA associated with that Tier C is lower than the COLA with Tier B. So there are terms and conditions that are different than Tier B, and so you would be subject to those new terms.
But in that case, would the employee would still get the benefit of the higher percentage for the years they worked in that plan, would they not?
No, because what's presented today is that time under Tier B would be rolled into Tier C. And if I'm right, so, and again, we were, what we shared here today is also allowing the four or five employees that are currently affected by this to make a choice whether they, under the current language, would have two separate calculations of their retirement. So they have a calculation under Tier B because they have the years under Tier B, and they would have a calculation under Tier C. That's how the wording is currently
right.
situated. But here, we would allow you to roll your time. Instead of rolling it backwards, we would allow you to roll it forward. And so we would give people that option.
Okay, maybe... Maybe we need to do a little bit more work on it to see what's possible. I want to hear from the members. But tier Tier B, what percentage is that for? Is it 3% or 2.5% a year?
We have Rick Rivera. I believe he's on the line. He can speak to the...
It's 3%.
It's 3% for Tier B, and it's
2.5
for Tier
C. So I personally don't think that an employee should be punished. So employees here under Tier B, they leave, they come back under Tier C. Right. I don't want to punish an employee and make them lose the 0.5% per year. My only point previously was I don't want to – I'm not going to reward the employee by leaving and giving them 3% for all their years. But my point months ago was I don't think that we should require an employee to vest a second time. So that they're vested under Tier B, they leave, they come back, and right now we're making them vest again under Tier C, and they've already vested. So that was kind of my concern. John, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the question is, if you move some of your time from B into C, would you be able to use that 3% multiplier so that when you move over, you have... You're not just doing 5 years at 2.5, you're doing 5 years at 3. That now goes into Tier C. All the other rules apply. It's just that your time in Tier B that you're moving over is still applicable to that higher 3% multiplier. And we can ask Rick, but that's, I think, what the question is.
Right.
So that
exactly.
way you're not penalized for moving your time over, because your time is your time, whether you leave it there or not. It's just the retirement age and all the other things right. would apply.
And that's how it's currently set up now. So you would have those two calculations. So you would have your calculation with the Tier B terms and conditions, and then you would have your calculation without having to revest. You would have it under both tiers. So it's set up that way.
I know, but this is about the new proposal.
The new
which
proposal.
Is when you move over, are you move over in 3 times 5 years, or 2.5 times 5? And I think it's 3 times 5.
It's
Rick,
three.
Can we ask Rick? Rick, can you comment on this thing? Are you there? Rick, hello? Sounds like he's not on. Okay.
Okay, so because I want to make sure, my only point previously was that I didn't think it was fair that we make the employee vest a second time. Mm-hmm. So that if you've already vested and got your time in under Tier B, you come back, let's say if you work 2 more years, you wouldn't vest under C, but I think we should count their prior service in terms of vesting, because I don't want them to have to vest a second time. That's at least my belief. But I don't want to punish someone and make them take the 2.5% for all years, okay? Right. Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for helping to try to sort this out. I think we need a little more sorting to get there. Question. If someone worked the city under Tier B but did not vest, say, 3 years, and now they come back and they're in Tier C for 2 years, current policy, 3 plus 2, are they vesting with that 5 or no? Okay. Right. Now, does the administration have a recommendation for those in that situation, they did not vest, but they worked here, that they would be able to add those numbers together to their cumulative service under the benefits of C? Is that something you all think is a good idea, a bad idea, or not sure?
So, again, I'm hoping that Rick Rivera is on the call, because this question that you had was posed to the pension office in order for them to be able to speak to the answer.
And he is on the call now.
Okay.
Okay, let's hear from Rick.
Good morning, committee. Can you hear me?
Yes, just speak up a little bit.
Okay. So pertaining to John bringing in the 3% from Tier B, rolling it into Tier C with the proposal, I don't really see a problem with that. It could be calculated like that. I would of course have any proposed changes sent to the plan's attorney for approval.
You know, I don't think we're fully prepared on this today. Let's bring this back next month if we can, and so we can have all these answers, questions answered. And if you need, I'm happy to send you all the questions.
Sure.
So, because, you know, Commissioner, you just raised a really good point. I hadn't thought about the question of right. somebody did invest in B, right. and they're going to have to use some time in C. I think that they should be able to do that, I believe, the yeah. total time.
Can we just follow up on that?
Sure.
I agree that we probably need to have this brought back so that we've got clarity in the memo, the administration's opinion. Rick, if you're still with us, and I'm not sure if you caught the tail end of the question, but my colleague sort of summarized it very well. Someone works for 3 years under B. They left. They now come back under C. We all understand now they're in the C. Does the 3 years count to their total service, i.e. they would have vested with their 2 years and they're at five? Is that that's not what we do today, but is that something that the pension HR team supports?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, that sounds good. I support that. I think if someone has served and they made a decision to leave, understood they didn't vest, understood they're no longer in Plan B because they didn't get their full 5 year, but right. they shouldn't get zero. Right. And so that part of it I like. But, Commissioner, I agree with your thought. I don't think we need to land today. I think we need to give our team a little more time, just because we want it to be as clear as possible with the questions, and bring it back next month.
Yeah, and to your point, with the Florida retirement system, if someone leaves and comes back, they can count their prior years, but there's not the situation with different tiers. But Commissioner Areola, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we bring it back, and then I would like maybe John. You know, if you can give us your recommendation, you're just closer to the action than we are. I'd like to put you on the spot and give us your guidance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't think this is going to be any big fiscal impact for the city. However, it's an important policy, and we've got a lot of different variables, and so we've got the time that we can spend a little bit more time on this. So let's bring this back next month, and then I certainly will meet with you all before the meeting, and my colleagues can do the same if they wish to do that, and I'll give you all my questions, and sure. and we won't play stump the star. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right.
This is important. So, with that, we had a time certain. We're running a few minutes late, so I apologize. But we're gonna call item 8 now, the Lincoln Lane project. So. I'd like to hear from the administration. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and we gave you a little bit more time to work with the parties. So give us a little update, and then what I'd like to do, members, is let us get an update, and then I'll hear from the two parties, and then we'll ask questions. Okay, so go ahead, Raquel. You're recognized.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. The last time that we met, we did ask for that additional time, and we're appreciative of that. We have been meeting consistently with both development teams on this.
Excuse me. Let's bring the chamber to order because I can't hear you. Okay, go ahead, Raquel. Start over.
Thank you. I was just saying thank you for the additional time. We have been meeting with both teams very diligently and frequently to try to get to where we are today. A few updates since our last meeting on April 19th. The planning board on April 26th did provide a unanimous favorable recommendation for all the land use amendments that were recommended as appropriate for this project and as being proposed to the City Commission on May 4th. We also received a draft revised appraisal on April 26th, and I do want to highlight that it is still in draft form and it was attached to your agenda item as supplemental. This appraisal is a reference point. It does not take into account the cost associated with the replacement parking that the developers would pay for and that the city would benefit from. It also does not take into account the actual ground lease. So we're going into the second phase of the appraisal where the actual lease will be valued based on its market value as is. We did get a material change from TPC in terms of their financial proposal. And at this time, both proposals are more in line with each other. For TPC, they did opt to go with 43 market rate units, as well as they are offering to make their rent payments based on the proposed target dates as opposed to the outside dates, which means that the rent payments would come sooner than previously anticipated. Based on a summary of both financial proposals, we're looking at for Integra for the present value price per square foot of $276.97 and TPC at $293.01. In terms of the percentage rent with EGI included, both teams are neck and neck, with Integra at $412.92 and TPC at $412.27.
Okay. With that, I would like to give the teams an opportunity. So we'll take Integra first. I think that was the P25 and P26. If you've got Brian, I don't know if you're who's going to speak for that, but we'll recognize you for a max of 5 minutes just to talk again about your project. I don't know that there were with yours any substantive changes, but go ahead. You're recognized. Good morning.
Morning. Good to see you all again. As a reminder, I'm Andrew Korn. I'm managing director with Starwood Capital. I head up Florida acquisitions and development for us. As we've talked about before, our project that we've proposed here is two buildings. We've got an amazing architect, Brandon Haw, who spent a lot of time making these buildings beautiful. And he came from Foster and Partners, where he was the lead designer at Faena House. And so we want to bring that, you know, aesthetic to Miami Beach, but the right fit for office buildings and today's office buildings. So, you know, open spaces, and we're not talking about big buildings here. We're not talking about skyscrapers or anything like that. It's actually smaller than the project that we developed with our partners earlier this year, our headquarters building in Miami Beach. It's actually slightly smaller than that, so nothing too big. And you can see the pictures that have been shown here. So we've worked hard with your staff, as we talked about in the past, to really create a financial proposal that we feel like we've, you know, really moved a lot on to work with you all for this opportunity, and we think is very attractive economically. You know, this includes in the first year paying $2.5 million, and then there are minimum guaranteed rents. And on top of that, when we get a temporary certificate of occupancy at both of our buildings, we'll be paying the city an extra bonus $1 million. And so by the time we really open our doors, we've already paid the city, you know, $8 million, which, you know, we've really gone out of our way to try and, you know, make that attractive for you all. And during that time, we've worked hard to create a parking mitigation strategy where there's going to be no parking loss that we talked about before on these parking lots for all the residents. And we're also out of our pocket rebuilding the parking structures to replace all the parking that that will be built on these sites. So, again, we have the money to build this project. Starwood Capital has a very large fund to invest in this deal that we wish we could do tomorrow, but we know we have a lot more to accomplish till we get to that. But we really are excited about what we can bring to Miami Beach and diversify the economy here as you all wanted to. And yeah, we're really excited about the project. So,
thank you very much. Appreciate your time. We'll probably ask a few questions, but I want to go ahead and get to TPC and let whoever's going to speak come on up. Thank you. Good morning. You're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Richardson. Gentlemen, it's great to see you again, and we want to reiterate what a pleasure it's been to work with city staff and your staffs individually as we've made meaningful progress over the past several weeks to improve our offer and deliver more value to the city. We are producing what we believe to be a transformational mixed-use development grounded in ultra-luxury Class A office with a residential component designed by a world-renowned architect in Bejarke Ingalls. We plan on delivering, as I've outlined before, over $250 million of economic activity, $70 million of taxable earnings, 1,000 permanent jobs. This is an economic catalyst, no doubt. We plan on mitigating parking and have outlined to each of your respective staffs our plan to ensure that both during construction and during operations, the parking and traffic is of no meaningful imposition to the citizens. We've worked with staff to ensure that our ground lease provides certainty, both from an economic perspective and from an execution perspective. The last time the City of Miami Beach disposed of a surface parking lot to develop luxury Class A office, they disposed of it to our team. And we delivered, and we plan to deliver again. This project to us is a meaningful continuation of both our family and the Robbins family's multi-generational commitment to the City of Miami Beach. And we're ready, willing, and able to get started immediately. And very much like our colleague said, the quicker we can get started and deliver value to the city, the happier we are. And we're chomping at the bit to get ready.
Thank you. And I know you've had a couple of changes to your proposal. You've got a lump sum, I think that was $2 million, right? And I think you've moved it a little bit closer to the beginning. Can you just tell us what that change is?
Absolutely. Not only do we have a lump sum payment of $2 million placed either at the earlier milestone of commencement of construction or 23 months after the effective date, but we've tied all of our payments, instead of to milestones, to the earlier of the achievement of the milestone or a set number of months after the effective date. So we can ensure that the city's getting the money as outlined in your package or sooner. So the net present value that sits in front of you is the absolute lowest that it could be with all set of assumptions. We plan on beating those target dates by a number of months and delivering the building far in advance of what's outlined in the schedule.
Thank you. So, members, with that, I'm going to take personal privilege just to lead off with a couple of comments, if you don't mind. I had an opportunity to sit and go over all the numbers with TPC and to try to understand them better. Initially, the proposal had 9 units of workforce housing. I was struck at how significant the difference was in cash flow with and without the workforce housing. So I actually have a sort of a little bit different way that we can support workforce housing initiatives. And I'm very supportive of having market rate on the project because the cash flow for the city is significantly different, not just a little bit different, significantly. But I think the way that we could support workforce or affordable housing is I would propose, if we move this forward, and I'm supporting moving both of these forward, is that we would take both lump sum payments, the 2.5 from Integra and 2.0 million, and I would earmark that money for affordable or workforce housing and put it in a capital fund, and it could only be used for that purpose. Otherwise, we would have had workforce housing on this project, but we can get actually a much bigger bang for our buck if we take that $4.5 million and allocate it for either workforce housing or affordable and or workforce housing. And so I would like this committee to consider that. And with that, I'll yield to both of you to ask questions or to comment. Go ahead. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a question for the folks from Integra. In one of the biggest differences in these two projects that I see, and they're both fine projects and tremendous effort has been put forward by our city staff and both applicants, is this question of use. Now, I know we started with the mantra of diversification in office. That was something that got us here. I've been one of the biggest proponents of that with my colleagues. And I believe that the other project here has residential. We talked about this last time. Did you think about that as an option? Is it still 100% office? What are your thoughts on the potential impact of having residential so there's more 24/7 activity?
Yeah, well, the way we first approached it, as we discussed before, is obviously you guys asked for office, and frankly, the zoning didn't allow for us to, you know, we would have made a proposal that we would have needed a zoning change to work, and so that wasn't something that we wanted to present a project that we knew we could execute on. And, you know, I did mention last time that if we did look at residential, our payments and our financial structure would significantly change. So we have not, I mean, I think it would really, we spent a lot of time to get to where we are on our design of the office building. to be able to deliver something to you guys on the residential side would take a much longer period of time than we've had. But again, it's not going to result in a as favorable economic deal for the city.
No, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you did exactly what we asked. Of course, this is a sort of joint discovery process. We learn as we go. We hear ideas and sort of build on it. And in my conversations with the community, I sense that, at least in some segments of the community, they more understand the need for housing, and some of them also understand the need for office. So I know that's where we were last time. It sounds like you gave it thought and are making a conscious choice, but I did want to hear from that. So that answers my question.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. All right. So your thought about earmarking for workforce housing, I'd be open to supporting that, particularly, you know, we'll see what we do with the Barclays project that we talked about previously. We could potentially build quite a healthy kitty for workforce housing, and then I would think we'd roll that into a P3 somewhere. We have a development partner take on the responsibility of building something like that, but we can contribute significant dollars and possibly build hundreds of units. And ideally, strategically, somewhere in the city where the workforce housing would be close to mass transit lines and where we would want to activate. So I would be supportive.
Thank you. Let me ask Rafael you a question. We've got two projects here. I think it's going to be two referendum questions, right? Two different.
That's our plan, yes.
Okay. So on the one, P25 and 26, I think, right, is where we'd get the $2.5 million, and on 27 is the two. Do I have the numbers right? Okay. So I don't know how the question is going to be worded, but what I would not want to happen if the commission approves the idea of earmarking the money for workforce housing or affordable housing or some combination is I wouldn't want voters to, without getting into the details, look at one project and say we're only getting $2 million and the other we're getting $2.5 million, because the valuation is different. So, for example, with 25 and 26, it's $2.5 million. If you take a pro rata share based on the appraisal, I calculated about $1.8 million, and we're actually getting $2 million. So it would be a little more. So I think before, it sounds like we're going to move this to commission. Is that, Commissioner Areola, are you supportive to move this to commission?
Yeah, I'm definitely supportive of moving it to commission. And just if I'm following you, do we have to put in the ballot language where the money would be earmarked?
And I was just going to address that. Traditionally, what we've done is that the use of the proceeds would be added as a separate standalone question. Because of our obligation in 75 words to describe very complicated transactions, so it's hard enough just to get all the material terms in. If you wanted to have a separate question of how you want to dedicate certain proceeds, you could do that and provide that it's at the proceeds from one or both of the projects would be dedicated for.
Well, let me ask this: is if the commission were to support a resolution that if these items were approved in referendum, the two items, could we just earmark the money by resolution, a vote of the commission, that if the referendum passed, that the commission would support the money to be put towards workforce housing?
Yes, and that's how we've done it before, both for the marina project and the hotel project. But those also included a referendum question to ask the voters if they supported the use of the funds for those purposes.
Commissioner. Yeah, I would just say that, you know, the upfront lump sum payments is only a small component of the overall economic value and benefit to the city. So I would not favor putting that on the ballot, because I think it's a little bit it doesn't paint the whole picture of why we're supporting this project. It's not for $2 million. It's for the hundreds of millions of dollars of economic benefit over the decades to come. So I don't think it tells anywhere near the full picture. I think we could do that as a policy matter, where we would commit as a
commission to earmark that money for workforce housing. But this whole project is a lot more to do with economic diversification, bringing jobs, supporting Lincoln Road, work, live, play. There's a lot of reasons why we're doing this, and it has nothing, you know, really, it's only a very small part about the economic dollar payment.
I totally agree. It's just that when I sat and looked at all the detailed numbers on the TPC and the 9 units of workforce housing, which, by the way, represents about 20% of the total housing, or maybe close to 25%, I just thought there would be a better way to support workforce housing. So with that, are you moving the item that we move this back?
I will move it, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to second your motion that both items will be moved back to the commission with the support of, and we're going to hear from Commissioner Samuel, and
since I may be in the minority, Mr. Chair, workforce housing is an important priority, and I believe that that is something that, you know, we should allocate and look to allocate funding. I would just say, and I think we're going to hear next month, some really critical needs as it relates to water and sewer infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure, citywide lighting. So I love workforce housing. I'd love to have the money that we could do all that, but my sense is there are other needs. I want to talk about where I'm going to end up landing today and at commission on this. I am a huge believer in the strategic diversification of our economy. I think we're making important progress, whether it's on Terminal Island, whether it's at 5th and Michigan, the project on Purdy, a new one that I believe Commissioner Arriola and I are co-sponsoring on Alton Road, and I think it's all goodness. Of course, there's a lot of activity in commercial, and as last time I mentioned, incredible activity in residential, $500 million to buy out the units on one property. So there's a lot of things happening at the city. I've been pretty consistent from the start that I believe that public land really has to pass an incredible threshold before we take action. And for me, this land has been in public hands, you know, perhaps up to 100 years, and we're making calls today about what's going to happen for the next 100 years. I've always said that I would strongly consider and would be open to supporting one project. Now, why is that? One, first off, there's a lot of things happening in that area. You have the Convention Center Hotel. There's about to be a whole heck of a lot of development happening with that. Two, we're now talking, if both projects were to proceed, with three parking lots impacted. It's not a free roll where we get the benefits of economic development. There's parking impacts. There are traffic impacts. There's impact on our public works. I also believe when we put something like this to the voters that it is critical that we say we got the absolute best deal. And we only had one proposal for each of these, three proposals total. But one, we're talking to one folks about one thing and one thing about the other. Someone said, Commissioner Samuel, is that the absolute best deal for that? I personally, others may differ, but I personally say, well, I don't know. I think having the projects stacked up against each other and picking the absolute best, to me, would give that confidence. The final thing I would say for those who really want to see this happen, I worry about voter confusion. I do. There's a lot of ballot items. You start now looking about multiple projects. So for me, if the commission will select one project based on the advice of our city administration, I will be willing to proceed. If that is not the case, then I'm going to be a no on both.
Thank you, and thank you for your comments. Commissioner Ariel,
yeah, I mean, that's like you support something you don't, so you either have it your way or you'll vote no on both. That makes no sense, but you're entitled to your opinion. Look, I mean, we're calling this two separate projects because we had two separate bidders, but this could have conceivably been one project that one developer wanted to do in its entirety. We put it all out to bid so that we would get the best proposals from the best developers. And so, you know, this is in essence one project being divvied up between two developers, but it's to, you know, really do a lot of things for our city, diversify the economy, bring jobs here, have a recurring tax base, support Lincoln Road. Oh, and by the way, gain parking spaces, not take away parking spaces. So this is a net-net huge win for the city. And, you know, it just happens we have two proposals to evaluate. But this is actually one major development that's happening at this site. So I just think it's semantics to say you'll support one and not the other. Both of them are world-class, done by really, really highly qualified developers. So I'm very supportive of both projects.
Thank you. And I would just add that, first of all, I want to thank the staff, Raquel, you, Eric. You've done a lot of work on this. And also, Rick, thank you. We appreciate having you here at the city. We really do. And with all the wealth of experience that you brought with you. And to the proposing teams, thank you for all the hard work and explaining everything to us. So we're going to move these both projects to the full commission with a favorable recommendation that they both be added to the referendum. And John, when are we going to be able to do that for May 4th? I think that was the initial plan that we were.
Yes.
Okay, so show these both items. We'll move to the full commission for consideration with a favorable recommendation from the Finance Committee. And we can have the further conversation there, fair comments, right, and make your case, and we'll see where we go from there. And with that, we're going to close this item out, and we'll see everyone on May 4th at the commission meeting. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners.
Thank you. We have one remaining item, I believe, on the agenda, and that is item 13 on the solid waste commercial. Who from the administration is going to be presenting? I think we also have some consultants here.
Good morning, Chairman Richardson, Vice Chairman Samuelin, Commissioner Abiola, Joe Gomez, Public Works Director. The item before you today is to discuss the commercial solid waste franchises, which are set to expire, September 30th, 2022. The current agreements. The current franchises are held, just as a reminder, by Waste Management Inc. and Waste Connections. If you recall, originally there were three. Franchisers. Southern Waste Services was acquired by Waste Management around 2016, so in essence we have only two. The presentation today is solely going to focus on the commercial franchises, not the residential component. I want to make that clear. So today we're going to present to you, through our consultant, some analysis that we've done in the marketplace, and then we're also going to provide you with some recommendations for your consideration. So with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Phil Breeze, senior consultant with MSW Consultants, and Brad Kane, our sanitation division director.
Joe, let me just get us in the proper posture. I think we've got current contracts that are still operational and
yes, sir,
here to performance through September 30th of
that
this
is
year,
correct.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, go ahead, introduce yourself and let us know who you are and what we're doing today.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. My name is Phil Brzee. I'm a senior consultant with MSW Consultants, and as Joe mentioned, I'll provide an overview of some of the work that we've been doing on behalf of the city, Brad and his team, and then present some recommendations as well. So there is a slideshow.
Okay, let's tee that up then.
Right. Yeah, so if we can, next slide. If I can just take a second just to do the shameless self-promotion, MSW Consultants, we were founded in 2004. We're headquartered in Orlando. We have offices in Pennsylvania and Maryland. And we offer a pretty, comprehensive list of services and project portfolios. And this particular project on behalf of the city, this is concerns helping the city with procurement and contracting support. And Brad did want me to also mention just my own experience. I was the recycling program manager in Broward County from 2004 to 2013, so I certainly have experience in the South Florida market and have awareness of the challenges and issues that are faced down here. So I just wanted to make sure that made that intro. You can go to the next slide. So, again, the objective is just to present some of our findings and as well as issue some or present some of the recommendations on behalf of city staff and then seek guidance and direction from you all. And so to sort of slice up the project in the way that we have approached it, we've done some benchmarking of regional cities. We also have performed some business outreach and rate analyses that we will get into. And then the next phase of this project, we'll be providing support for the sanitation division as they actually hit the street and try and procure new solid waste services. Next slide, please. So just, won't spend much time on this, but you all know your services, but just a quick overview. Residential services are provided to households, single-family households multifamily dwellings in properties of up to 8 units. It's a pretty comprehensive services with backdoor collections and twice-a-week pickup, and the residential services are provided by Waste Connection on the refuse side, and then Coastal Waste and Recycling provides them for recycling through the intergovernmental agreement that the city has with Miami-Dade County. On the commercial side, services are provided to multifamily properties with more than 8 dwelling units, and services are from dumpsters, compactors, roll-out carts. And I think it's important to understand and emphasize that if you're a business in Miami Beach, you are contracting directly with the service provider, with Waste Management or with Waste Connections. And so the city has very limited control over the rates and the customer service and things like that. Next slide. Again, the service providers, Waste Management, there's about 2,300 commercial properties. So Waste Management has about 61% of the market share, and then Waste Connection has about 39%. Next slide. So I think just pause for a second just to, again, reemphasize why I'm here. You have contracts that have been in place since 2014. They are expiring they've been extended already, and they're going to be expiring at the end of this fiscal year. And so, again, we have been brought on to help, write the new procurement documents. And as part of this presentation, we're going to be asking on behalf of staff to allow for an extension of these existing contracts for up to a year just to allow the procurement process to play out. One other comment is that, the current contracts have a considerable amount of in-kind services, including collections at city facilities and parks, public litter can collections, as well as funding support for things like illegal dumping abatement, environmental education, and household hazardous waste programs. And those types of features are things that will no doubt be part of the RFP or the procurement document as we go forward. So I just wanted to make that clear. Next slide, please. I mentioned we did some benchmarking, so we looked at cities in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, looked at 13 or 14 of them, and actually evaluated and dug into contracts and pricing for 10. And next slide. So as far as how these jurisdictions and jurisdictions in Florida generally, organize their approach to solid waste services, particularly on the commercial side, there's really three key ways. And so going from sort of the less regulatory control approach to more regulatory control, some cities will allow for an open market system for commercial solid waste. And so that allows for for companies to compete for individual accounts and businesses. And then the actual generators, those individual businesses, will, hire their own haulers. The non-exclusive approach, which is the system that Miami Beach has in place, can permit multiple franchisees who can compete for services and sometimes can also be organized by geographic area. And exclusive is where the contractor or franchisee is the exclusive provider and has the exclusive right to the waste generated in that city. Again, that's something that's what we're going to be talking a little more about as we go on. Next slide. Again, looking at how other cities in the region approach, as you see, the looks like 7 of the 10 cities that we actually analyzed as far as contracts you know, use an exclusive franchise. So this is something that there's much precedent for in Florida, not just in South Florida, but you see a lot of exclusive franchise over really across the state. Next slide, please. And I'll apologize in advance for these next couple slides. These are sort of garbage geeky, and but I think I just want to point out that in what I'd call a healthy and competitive system, commercial pricing ideally is going to be more transparent and more fair and more rational. One of the ways you sort of set those up in exclusive systems is you have something called a standard pricing matrix. And then again, that allows for that pricing to be better understood by all parties. Next slide. Just looking at some of the other jurisdictions, so 7 out of the 10 jurisdictions that we dug into do have that standard pricing matrix that that's in the previous slide. On the compactor side, pricing is also pretty consistent with industry standard, although the rates will vary much. Rates vary a little more, and that's all stuff, by the way, that will be included in the technical memo that will be just provided to your division, Brad. Next slide, please. Finally, just sort of comparing city approaches to multifamily. Some for the profiled cities include multifamily dwellings as a separate customer class, and actually issue or build them per household, while 6 of the cities actually sort of treat them as more like commercial properties. So again, that's just sort of an example of how these are treated in other jurisdictions and examples of maybe ways that the city could approach this going forward. Next slide. All right. Well, I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, part of our effort was to conduct some outreach of the business community. We did make some considerable effort, we believe, to gather business input from across a pretty wide swath, we think. The results, unfortunately, were not what we wanted. So we did contact a number of bids and the Chamber of Commerce and other entities. And asked if they could distribute our 14-question survey to their members. Only a couple of these organizations actually took us up on that, and we did not get a very robust response. Next slide. Of the response that we did get, we found that there was some dissatisfaction with the current system, which to us means there's a lot of opportunities for improvement. And there's, the respondents were relatively split as far as what's most important to them, and that's, getting high quality service or getting the lowest price. Next slide.
Through the chair, if I may. Just a question. That last point about how satisfied our commercial users is absolutely critical. So I'm curious, and you were upfront and honest that we hadn't gotten much impact. Do we have anything from our community surveys that we've done in the past, any other research, and I'm dying to let you talk about this next slide of qualitative input. What do we know about what the businesses and commercial owners and multifamily think today?
Well, Commissioner Salmon, not so much obviously on that particular point. We've had like a couple of years ago, I believe the last one was in 2019, but that was focused more on the residential. So I don't believe really there's a survey that, really has that kind of data, which is, partially why we went with this survey approach. One of the other, thoughts we had at this point, based on that was, working in conjunction with economic development and marketing and communication to maybe do like a solid waste forum, and invite all the, participants that we could get a little bit more of a better feeling and understanding of where everybody's at. So that would be our thought, going forward to get a little bit more data as it relates to that item.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to see that slide. I think you were going, so do I. That's absolutely critical to my view of this is how satisfied are the users and customers today, and would this make them feel better about what we do? So very important priority.
And if I could say that, we did, at the beginning of this project, did look at the survey from 2019, the larger community survey, and it definitely has some good information in there. Our survey was way drilled down compared to that, so we dug in a lot deeper than the community survey. But, you know, in issuing the survey and getting the responses that we did receive, you know, we were able to highlight some common themes from the respondents. And so some of the things that we heard more about were a desire to improve quality of service, including collection consistency, making sure stuff gets picked up the day it's supposed to get picked up, improvement to hauler accountability. There was a desire to add clarity to contract pricing, including special charges, and that's something that I'll show you in a second on in an upcoming slide. There's also concerns about our desire to decrease traffic, particularly, you know, in a city like Miami Beach, where traffic is, always heavy and space is a premium. There were a lot of comments on desire to, you know, decrease the number of trucks on the street. Comments about uniformity with different haulers and different container styles and branding and instructions and things like that. I think that there were definitely some respondents who wanted to see some improvements made to that. And the final comment I'll make is that there were also respondents that, you know, expressed a desire to have the city perform more insofar as, you know, customer service and troubleshooting challenges and things like that with the haulers. Next slide. So we were able to get some pricing from a property management firm, and so we're able to analyze pricing from one hauler, providing service to 15 properties. And again, this is a very small sample size. I just want to make sure that you make that clear. But we did see a lot of variance in invoicing and rates charged from one property to the next. We analyzed service levels, the types of containers, the charges and fees, and also looked at it on a per household and a per service type of basis, just to get our arms around what property managers were seeing. Next slide, please. And so what we found is, as I mentioned, the rates for garbage and recycling service vary widely. So just looking at the top, table right there, they ranged on a cubic yard basis. They range from a low of $20.05 per cubic yard to almost $80 per cubic yard. Just looking at it from a per household standpoint, the range went from $22.64 to $85.38 on the garbage side, and as you can see in the next table below, on the recycling services, the ranges are very similar, very wide ranging. The other thing I'll point out is that a lot of the invoices had special charges for environmental fees, for administrative costs, regulatory costs, fuel charges. Those are things that, you know, are not necessarily transparent. And I think a lot of property managers, you know, want to know what those fees are for, how those fees are assessed, and why are we paying them. So that's something that we did see in as we analyzed these invoices. And the one other comment I'll make is that there is also some inconsistency in the actual capacity for trash and recycling services. And the, you know, former recycling director in me, you know, wanted to highlight the weekly capacity number at the bottom of the second table and just say that, you know, that's not a lot of space. That's not a lot of room for people to put recyclables. And so I think new franchise agreements going forward could look at, you know, strengthening capacity standards, requiring haulers to actually provide more larger bins, more service for recycling. Next slide, please. So going forward, you know, it's our hope that the city will be issuing a competitive procurement for commercial services only. We're going to and hope to change from the current non-exclusive system to an exclusive system. Just one point about that is that commercial recycling is by state law, it has to be open market. So, you know, the Waste Management and Waste Connections certainly provide those services, but they don't have exclusive right to those services. So there are plenty of other haulers that can provide commercial recycling services. As part of this, the sanitation division would like to assume greater responsibility for contract management and customer service and invoicing. And, going forward, my firm would help the city draft the procurement documents and assist with evaluations. Next slide, please. So, you know, the pros and cons of going from a non-exclusive to an exclusive system. So the pros, procurement, competitive procurement process will allow for competitive pricing, we believe. We also believe that the pricing for most ratepayers or customers will decrease, will allow for improved service level and pricing transparency. Those things would be, you know, baked into the procurement, into the contracts. Very important is that it can allow for operational efficiencies and economies of scale. So instead of multiple haulers, you have one hauler. Streamline contract management, improved hauler accountability. And the last two points, less truck traffic on Miami Beach streets means fewer greenhouse gas emissions, which I know are goals that are, you know, very front and center in the city's climate action plan. Next slide, please. So Miami Beach is actually in a good position in the sense that there is a very robust market, very competitive bidding market. And so there are a mix of the largest service providers actually in the country that have, you know, are very well established down here, as well as other, you know, more regional but very reputable private haulers. So there certainly is a very the bidding environment, I think, will be very favorable to the city. So next slide. So again, we're here to recommend on behalf of staff that that they be authorized to procure commercial solid waste franchise services under an exclusive franchise system, and then also authorize them to negotiate month-to-month extensions not to exceed 12 months with the existing haulers, so to allow the procurement process to play out and to move forward. And I just will say that we believe that this will bring added benefits to the city, and that, you know, this certainly has much precedent in Florida and in other parts of the country. So that concludes my remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit more about you and your firm. Have you ever done work for the city before, of Miami Beach?
No.
And sure. How did you get this procurement contract, this consulting engagement? Was it a competitive procurement?
Yes.
And so there was an RFP, and you responded, and there were multiple bidders, and then you were selected?
That's correct.
Okay, great. And is it – it's an open order, so because you mentioned you have the capacity to offer additional services for the city, so those would just be task orders.
I think so.
Okay, good.
Couple questions, if I may. Please. First, you said that there are precedents locally. Just rattle off a handful of names of South Florida municipalities that approach it in the exclusive way that you're recommending.
I'm going to have to get my glasses on and refer back to the table, but, cities like Tamarack, Pompano Beach, here we go, I think that's slide 9, Davie, Delray Beach, North Miami Beach, City of Sunrise, so those are, I think those are, you know, the 10 that we highlighted, or the numbers that actually, the cities rather, that we did some research into. The list goes on. There are many more, you know, in all three counties that also have exclusive systems. We just didn't, you know, compile that entire list.
And you mentioned there are benefits to the community and city. You had a nice list of pros and cons. But if you had to give us the punchline, you know, here's the biggest thing that it does for this community or city to try this approach, what would it be?
Better control over services and pricing, more rational pricing, more transparent pricing. Less truck traffic, lower greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay, that's a helpful summary. And finally, you know, I'm very intrigued to understand the perspective of the current customers. You know, what do they think? I.e., we're thrilled, please don't touch what we're doing, to, oh my goodness, this looks great, we need something different. So I just want to underscore how important that is to me. But the other perspective is from the supply side. If you had to put yourself in the shoes of those providers, what are the pros and cons to them? I can guess if they win, they're going to get a bigger share. They now got the whole pie, not part of a pie. If they lose, they don't have any pie. What else might they think about as we contemplate this?
Well, I think you nailed it. right there. So I think that the there might be some in the hauling community that would say that this, you know, going to exclusive would cut them out of business opportunities. You know, but if you're on the winning side, obviously, you know, you have a contract, and maybe the perspective can be different.
Yeah. Final question, and then we can love to hear from you and sort of wrap. What is the time frame? When do we need to make a decision? When is sort of the red line that we have to nail? When will we hear more from the users and how they feel about it?
Okay, well, going back to what I first said initially, I the next step for us at this point, because we did obviously recognize, you know, with the feedback that that'd probably be something we need to do. So we're going to be coordinating an effort to do a, you know, kind of a forum relative to all those kind of survey questions and gather as many folks as we can to do that, hopefully, and that's, you know, probably in the next 30 to 60-day timeline. What we are also going to do as it relates to the contract is we are going to bring an item to the commission to extend the contracts for the current haulers on a month-to-month basis between 12 and 18 months to give us, you know, the valuable time that we need to make sure that we are able to, you know, get all the information gathered and be able to come back and present all these things and then, you know, obviously be able to take a recommendation to the city commission on which direction to go. But that item separately will come to the commission, you know, just so we have that time and have that extension, you know, and both haulers seem to have no problem with that.
Okay, so if I could just summarize, you need 60 days to go get that research. That could then be brought back to this body. In parallel, you'll go to the full commission, buy some time by allowing the month to month. Everyone's still getting their trash taken. Everyone's being treated fairly. If this turns out to be the right approach, you're going to tell us it is. If the world changes and you don't think it is, you'll tell us that as well.
Correct.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable with that direction, if you are.
Thank you. I have a lot of concerns here, and I'm going to speak pretty bluntly. We haven't met before. I'm a former auditor, a forensic auditor. This analysis that you presented today is significantly flawed. Mm-hmm. As a former auditor. Let me just give you a couple of examples. You've come in and said that you've looked at 10 municipalities and 7 of them are exclusive. I could have done an analysis and brought in 10 that were all non-exclusive. So you've cherry-picked your analysis, and I don't think it's objective. And so I want to hear about the others that are non-exclusive, but your analysis is not statistically valid. Now, let me speak to another. You got 15 responses out of, what, 6,000 opportunities. You can't make conclusions based on, you know, looking at a gnat on the backside of an elephant, right? I mean, it's just invalid, but you presented all of this as if it were the gospel. And my experience has been that when you ask people for their opinion, it's more likely that the people who are unhappy are going to chime in, and the people that are happy are not going to speak. So, you know, I just can't put any faith in this analysis. I don't know how much we paid your firm to do this, but if you've done this for other municipalities and entities, and you do it in the same way, I think it's a disservice to the community. So, I apologize, I'm speaking so bluntly. But you can't come in and present this in the way you have today and expect me to put any faith in the conclusions. So, I'm disappointed. So, I think a couple of things, and you mentioned that a separate item will be brought. The item is actually here in committee. So, if you're asking us to send it to the commission with a recommendation for a month-to-month, we will consider that. The other thing, Commissioner Samuelin, I notice, I don't know if you've looked at the agenda, I bet you have because you're very diligent. May 4th, Commissioner Fernandez has an item that is somewhat related. He has brought an item, a referral to this committee to consider certain, I guess, price maximums and so forth related to waste hauling. And so I'd like to get that item here so that we can incorporate it. I'm very curious to see what's on his mind.
And so what I want to do is continue the item. There's more work to be done. Continue the item. I would like to bring, it sounds like they maybe need 60 days. I would like to bring this back next month. I don't want to do public hearing today, but I'd like to bring this next month and hear from the waste haulers because I want to get that input along with it. But I also would like you all to come back next month and tell us what you can do to correct this flawed analysis of only giving us responses from 15 people because it's inadequate. Mm. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all of that. A couple thoughts. First, most importantly, what is the deadline by which we need commission action to the month-to-month so that we keep picking up the trash?
July, because you're recessed in August and the contract expires September the 30th, so we want to get it done as quickly as possible.
Okay. So if I can try and respond, I am absolutely fine to hear what Commissioner Fernandez is bringing forward. I think that, and I am aware of that item. I think it would be good for this committee to hear it. Number two, I do want to start the outreach. I think, Commissioner, you raised some fair questions about the work was done. I think I would obviously like to see a more statistically robust information. That said, I think that gap was acknowledged, and they're going to address it. So for me, I understand your view. My view is TBD. Let me see how robust that qualitative analysis is, that outreach to the community. Let me see what that looks like, and then I'll make a conclusion as to sort of the quality of the service that we've got. But if you're, if the motion, if we could frame it, one, that you want to bring it back next month for the waste haulers. Two, we want to get Commissioner Fernandez's item here as soon as possible. Three, that they immediately act to go to the community so we get the data from the users, if that's the essence of what you want to do. And then, of course, we make sure they get to commission by July. I agree.
Okay, perfect. So, so let's, on May 4th, Commissioner Fernandez has an item on consent. I think it will be referred. I may pull that item only for the purpose of asking him what's on his mind so we can hear from him publicly, right? Because I think it may be a good idea. I am not sold on this idea of going exclusive. I want to hear more. I want to hear from the waste haulers. I don't want to do that today. We're all hearing this presentation for the first time. We've got a lot more to digest. So next month, John, let's bring this item back. We will invite any waste hauler that would like to come and comment on this analysis that's been presented to us today. They can do that and give us their comments. And then we will, I hope, have Commissioner Fernandez's item before us that we can consider as part of this. Maybe he can tell us what is on his mind in terms of pricing. And then you're going to start some outreach, right, and
yes,
try
sir.
To do some additional
absolutely.
Analysis. The other, on the question of the month, Commissioner Samuelin, are you comfortable with that, moving that piece back to the commission and allowing the administration to do a month-to-month extension if they need it?
And I think that would be prudent, Commissioner, Mr. Chair, to go ahead and refer that to the commission for the month to month.
Okay, so show that done without objection. We will move that to, I don't know if you can get it on the May 4th, but you can get it on the meeting after that, and we will show a favorable recommendation that a month-to-month extension would be appropriate if we're unable to meet an October 1st deadline. So we'll move that out today, and then the motion you made with the 3 points is seconded, and we'll show that unanimous. And so we will invite any waste hauler, the current or any potential waste haulers,
are welcome to speak next month and react to this particular analysis that was presented to us today, along with any additional thoughts they have about service in the city of Miami Beach. In the meantime, if we're looking for ways to reduce traffic, we might find a way to reduce the hundreds of Amazon Prime trucks that are coming to our city every day. I'd love to find another way that we can get to the last mile delivery, but we can have that conversation another day. Gentlemen, do you have everything you need from us? Okay. I think we're adjourned. Thank you all. I appreciate it.